Welcome to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy and I got an email from a listener that sparked this program. This is all about...
Sure did. It's a good one.
Cooking realistically, modestly, you know, well.
Yes.
Maybe for just a limited number of people or something
like
that.
Well, I think she had a good point, which is that, you know, she's cooking for herself and she's also looking to, you know, maintain her weight. She had some weight loss and wants to stay there. So I think those are some very good points, which is cooking for yourself.
Yeah. So one, cooking for yourself.
Yeah.
Two.
Which is hard to do. It's hard to cook for one person. And it's also not very motivating. I mean, frankly, I mean, I live by myself and, you know, I find that it's, you know, I certainly don't cook the way that I would have when, let's, you know, even when we were married. I mean, it's just, it's no fun to cook for one person. So it's not very
motivating.
Setting
the table for yourself.
And I think my mother's going through the same thing. When my father passed away, I mean, my mother was a very good cook. And, you know, I think she just completely lost her motivation. She doesn't, you know, she cooked all those years for all four children and her husband.
Real chicken noodle soup for one.
Yeah, she's not. No. Yeah. Well, but she is smart. Like, she will still make noodle soup because she knows we all love it. And, you know, family is around her, but not in her town, and they do go to visit her pretty frequently, and so then she's got noodle soup in the freezer, frankly, which I'm not a big, actually, I'm not a freezer person at all. I really dislike using the freezer, but it works for people, so if that's what you want to do, go for it. Do it.
So the three goals of the program are cooking for yourself, or a small crowd, say two, cooking for maintaining your weight and being healthful, and cooking maybe with not, you know, without
with luxury, an eye towards cost.
With an eye towards, cost. And without luxury ingredients and that sort of thing.
Right. So. And the thing is, too, is that you can always multiply anything we talk about for your family because there aren't just single people out there. I mean, there are also people.
I was going to say, if someone has, nine children.
Oh, my gosh. And I can't even imagine the cost.
Dinner's for 11 every day.
Yeah, I can't imagine the cost of feeding.
There's managing your cost.
That's a lot. Well, and the thing, too, is that, you know, when I started making notes for the show, I was thinking about the fact that we make what we call employee meal or family meal every day. It's the same thing as what you do for your family, only we have to feed like 25 or 30 people out of that meal, and we have to watch our costs. I mean, we feed our waiters, all the staff every day.
And something good.
Right. And some of the rest, if the restaurant's open for lunch and dinner, they do two employee meals a day. So, I mean, we always do a very healthy, very fresh employee meal. And, you know, some restaurants will actually use, you know, food maybe that's not as nice for employee. I mean, we always do a very nice, realistic employee meal that's from great fresh food. So that's the same thing as cooking for your family at home. So I think that there's probably a list of ingredients that you and I have come up with that are just kind of things that people, you know, we're going to throw ideas around for these different foods that either you can grow in your garden, which is also what the lady that sent in the email, I said, you know, if it is at all possible that you are in a situation where you can grow a small garden, I mean, that is absolutely the most cost effective way you could possibly. And also, even if you're in the city and you don't have access, there are some city gardens that you can, you know, grab yourself a piece of dirt. And so I would find that if you really are interested and you live in the city and you're in an apartment building or whatever, and you don't have access to some dirt, you know, you can always get involved in one of those city garden projects. So that would be super cool and a great learning experience if it's not something you've ever done before. I can't tell you there's nothing like watching a plant seed go to plant to producing a vegetable or fruit or whatever. I mean, it's an amazing thing.
This
it's so cool when you do it.
Is my zucchini that I have brought to the world.
Exactly. Pretty much. And it did, you know, it cost you the price of the seed or the plant, which is probably a couple of dollars. And, we can get started with zucchini if you want, because we're talking about it.
So, zucchini is a great example. And that's something, it's got to show up. It probably shows up in both of our lists. We both made lists of ingredients for today to talk about. Things that we thought were sort of pet things that hit all those categories that, and we can run this a little bit like a quiz show, right?
Yeah.
So let's hear your list of pet ingredients in to get those three things done we're talking about.
Part of this is towards the south. So I start off with okra and then move to collard greens, rice and potatoes, corn, pork, eggs, squash, zucchini, squash blossoms, beans, whether they're fresh or dried, mirepoix, stock bones for stock sauces and risotto, tomato, and herbs and peppers. So that's my list.
We have some similar thoughts. It's funny, I didn't list either tomatoes or peppers on my list, although immediately I think of the jar of Calabrian chilies that I have that are like sort of half pickled and sitting in oil in my fridge that I end up using little tiny bits of that cost me almost nothing to flavor a million different things. My list, I have chickpeas, dried pasta, potatoes, quinoa, zucchini, apples, carrots, chicken thighs, trout, and chuck steak. So let me pick something from your list. Let's say, so tomatoes, how do you get, we're coming up on tomato season.
Yeah, and I think one of the great things about tomatoes is, you know, you can make a salad built around them. Something, you know, tomatoes, beautiful tomatoes sliced with maybe a piece of buffalo mozzarella or a little bit of crumbled goat cheese or just a lot of greens that, again, maybe you've grown or just nice and fresh at the market. And you can add raspberry vinaigrette and extra virgin olive oil to make a really light, pretty dressing, salt and pepper. And you could even put whole basil leaves or torn basil leaves in, a little bit of parsley leaves torn and put in. I love herbs in a salad, and especially if you're doing a very simple dressing like raspberry vinegar and extra virgin olive oil, you can add other things to it. And you know, you can also move towards making relishes from tomatoes, making a tomato relish with maybe a little bit of fresh lime juice, extra virgin olive oil, or fresh basil. And or chives. So hand chopped tomato, and you can use, I use all the, when I make a relish, I often use all the seeds and all the juice. It just helps to make the dressing taste better or the relish taste better.
If the tomato's ripe, then the seeds are going to not be bitter anyway. So.
Right. And finely chopped shallot, a little bit of finely chopped garlic, a good extra virgin olive oil, and salt and pepper, and then whatever herbs you like. So you can make a relish, or you could get green tomatoes and fry them, which are green tomatoes. You know, you can buy a case of green tomatoes and have fun with those for a period of time. Do, you know, you could pickle some green tomatoes, you could fry them, you could make a relish with them. You could, they're not the greatest thing to just have a slice of. I mean, a green tomato is not appealing that way, really, but you could grill a green tomato and put a piece of fish on it.
They're pretty good to pickle.
I love pickled green tomatoes. I just use, water, white vinegar, a decent amount of sugar, and a really good pickling spice. And what I do is I bring it all up to a boil and let the spice work in there for probably about 15 minutes. After it comes up to a boil, turn it down to a simmer. So let it simmer for 15 minutes. And then I strain it and put it back on, and then I pickle the tomatoes in there. And you just want a nice balance between the vinegar and the sugar, and that's really up to your own personal taste.
That's such a good foil, that kind of the pickled green tomatoes are the kind of thing that you, if you have them, even if you just have them in your fridge, you steam some rice, you have that, any protein, you know, and your meal is there, and it hits all the three we're talking about: an eye towards cost, healthful, and, you know, easy ingredients.
And pickled green tomatoes are really good with pork. Pork comes to mind. Birds come to mind. Like, again, this is not inexpensive, but quail. But definitely pork.
Maybe the chicken thighs on my list.
Yeah. So there are many, many things you can do with tomatoes. Frankly, I would just eat a plate of them. It could be as simple as that with some good oil and salt and pepper on.
I was thinking about, well, as you were talking about that, it was making me think about panzanella, you know, the great Italian salad with the bread from the previous day. If you're trying to be healthful, if you have some kind of protein-enriched bread and say it's the day-old stuff and you toast it really nicely and get good crouton from that, and they're good and dry. The whole thing with panzanella is to have, if you have a little onion, you have those tomatoes, especially tomatoes that are going overripe that you don't want to use for other things.
Because you want all that juice.
Exactly. It's
Yum.
Perfect for panzanella.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of thing that, like, you make it in the middle of the afternoon and serve it that night when the bread is, like, just... You throw the bread in there at the end. You have this whole bowl of tomato and onion, any of the veggies that you have around. So a cucumber is easy. Cucumbers are not expensive. It could be zucchini, but small ones, not big watery ones.
Mm-hmm.
Peppers when they come in season. But any of the fresh herbs, it's not a bad way to sort of take care of. If you have nice produce and you have little bits and pieces of things.
Yeah, it's a good
And you want to create a healthful meal. And it's pretty satisfying because of the crouton.
I love panzanella salad because of that.
That and a nice little piece of cheese or something as its own thing and a glass of wine. That's a very nice, easy meal.
That's a good Sunday supper.
You get your protein.
Mm-hmm. Do you put any acid in there? Do you just let the acid from the tomatoes do the job?
Acid from the tomatoes do the job. And the oil, you can have the fanciest extra virgin in the world. The main thing is that the oil that you have is fresh.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the biggest thing. And on the back of most jars or bottles of olive oil in the store, you're going to see some kind of a date. If there's a use-by date, it's usually 2 years after the pressing. So that's kind of a clue. If they don't have a proper date of when the harvest was on the bottle, it'll usually tell you that. The other thing you can do, you can always just smell the stuff. If it smells more like fruit, you know, great. If it smells more like a chemical,
right.
You don't want to put that on your food.
You could also put olives in that salad. That'd
olives
be
would be great in there.
Mm-hmm.
And they go a very, very long way for flavor. Olives, and olives, peppers, capers, three Mediterranean ingredients that go a very long way to flavor things that are, you know, they're salty, but there's not a big caloric impact.
Let's talk about your chicken thighs.
Let's talk about my chicken thighs. I was wondering when you're going to notice. I have such a good tailor, you know, that people don't realize
this.
Don't
realize that you have little chicken thighs. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So there are two things I like to do with chicken thighs. And you heard the one thing before,
mm-hmm.
which is if you do a really good job in a relatively dry pan or almost completely dry pan, especially if a cast iron or something really heavy and the heat is not crazy high, you can render the fat out of the skin on the thigh. And then, you know, and then pull it out, season the flesh underneath the what remains of the skin there, or remove the skin, honestly, season the rest of it, heat that pan up. You can add a little bit of oil if you need it, but mostly you're cooking the meat, the flesh, and the fat from the chicken. Flavor-wise, big difference.
Sure.
I always like a decent amount of very fine cracked pepper on those as well. I find when there's much more moisture in those because there's more fat in general in that flesh, but there's more moisture. That's the kind of thing that bears a little bit gentler cooking than more patient. I don't know. Patient cooking with chicken is a very big deal. If you're trying to rush a chicken breast, you're trying to rush a chicken thigh. Just chicken thighs, price-wise, you can buy a higher quality chicken thigh than you can buy the organic stuff. You can buy the farm-raised stuff that's local at a better price than you can buy chicken breasts that are
definitely
more the commodity chicken breasts.
Right, it just makes sense to buy the better product.
And get more flavor.
Sure.
And you, in the summertime, cook them through, chill them down overnight, and then you have them the next day, and it should be nice and moist and well-seasoned. And you can slice that thin and build a meal with a panzanella or build a meal with a cucumber salad or make yourself a little Greek salad. A little, just cucumber salad with a little bit of feta and lemon and fresh mint and olive oil is terrific with that kind of thing. But even more than a chicken breast the next day, chilled down, or anytime chilled down, is much nicer. The other thing you can do with that chicken thigh is pull it apart. You chill it down the next day, pull it apart, and make almost like a ragu. Or you can heat it back up with a little bit of water in the pan, or a little bit of wine in the pan, and serve it with steamed rice and those pickled green tomatoes you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
which might be fun. You could dust it with a little bit of a spice that's something that you like. That's
very cost-effective.
That's my chicken
thigh
story.
Good way to get some protein.
And you can, if you're thoughtful about cooking it, you can do a million things. All right. On your list, what's the most exotic thing on your list? I've mentioned rice twice already, and rice is on your list.
Mm-hmm.
So for God's sake, the world is full of people that can't cook rice. Can you in 1 minute tell them how to cook rice?
Sauté a small dice of onion and butter until it's translucent on low heat. Add 1 cup of rice for 4 people and stir it around for just a moment, and then add the liquid that you're going to add. Let's just say it's chicken stock. 2 fingers, so 2 fingers horizontally above the level of the rice. Okay, so that's how much liquid you add. And then you stir it. Bring it up to a boil, put a lid on it, turn the heat off, leave it on the back of the stove until it's ready, which is usually about 6 or 7 minutes.
And what kind of rice is this?
That's Uncle Ben's. It's the easiest way to do it at home.
Okay.
And salt and pepper from the beginning. And then, of course, you can do about a bazillion other things to that to make it some other kind of rice, but that is simple white rice. I like to add a little bit extra butter to it, but that is not, you know, obviously healthy.
You would not add extra butter to it. No,
I would probably put a quarter of a pound of butter in there. No, I would put a couple tablespoons of butter in. So that's just regular white rice, as simple as it gets. You know, one of the other things on my list is okra. And one of my favorite rice dishes is limpin. It's called Limpin' Susan, which I think the name is just fun. And it's a very old southern rice, and simply add sauteed okra to the rice near the end of the cooking. And or you can even add the okra to it after the rice is made, which is probably really the best way. Then you don't have as many of the sort of those mucilaginic, or whatever the right word is, threads. That's probably not the right word.
That was pretty accurate and graphic, actually.
Yeah.
You have to like okra and you have to like its characteristics.
You do. If you saute okra on high heat,
I do love it.
With corn oil. Which gives you the opportunity, instead of using butter, use corn oil. One, it's healthier, and two, it has a higher burning point. You really are going to like your okra a lot better if you saute it where it's golden brown, or even bread it. You know, do a little light flour, or it could be in buttermilk. You could actually go straight from buttermilk into cornmeal and bread it and saute it. And that's some seriously good okra there with a little salt and pepper on it.
When we come back on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine, it's Cindy Wolf and I going down our list of basic ingredients, basic cooking methods, with an eye towards cost in our cooking and an eye towards health on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And today we're talking about dishes, ingredients in dishes with an eye towards cost and an eye towards health. And we're running down each other's lists. So you have to pick something off my list.
Yeah, I'm excited about the trout, so let's talk about that right now.
You really threw me a curve. You asked me about something.
Ask
me about something off air.
I was going to ask about quinoa.
No, it's okay. Quinoa. Yeah, no.
Yeah. Let's go to trout.
So trout, we've talked about rice. It's really hard not to talk about trout because I know you can cook trout without butter. I don't know if you can cook trout that you're really going to like without butter.
Right.
And that's kind of the, like, you
a
can
little
use,
bit of butter. It's not like you're going to use that much.
No, it doesn't need a tremendous amount. I think the biggest thing with trout, nice fresh rainbow trout, you can get it consistently. I also on my list try to make a list of things that you can get most of the year, if not the entire year.
Well, I just tried to get things that they can actually buy at pretty much any grocery store.
Exactly.
I mean, your seasonal cooking is seasonal cooking, so.
Trout's pretty ubiquitous, and you can get them in decent quality. And if you get whole fish, it's really easy to tell how fresh it is by looking at the eye of the fish and feeling the flesh. That's
right.
Very straightforward.
The flesh to spring.
You don't have to cook the head on the fish. You can cut the head off the fish. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, I don't know.
It's nice to cook it with the head on, too.
Yeah, absolutely. So what you need is a large sauté pan, and it's much better to have one that has some weight to it. And people grill trout, and they stuff it and do all kinds of things. I don't know if there's ever a better and simpler and nicer way to eat trout than sautéed in the pan, relatively gently, just enough to get the skin crispy. And if you're going to use butter, if you're going to use butter in that pan, I would use a little bit of oil, a neutral oil, in the pan first. And that slows down if that butter is going to brown or it's going to burn or anything like that. At home, it's like rice in a rice pot for us, which is a very easy thing, and a quick sauté of vegetables. And by the time those things are on the table, what does it take to cook a trout? A minute and a half?
Yeah, not long.
Two
at
minutes?
All.
It's such a slender fish. You can always get them boned out.
A minute and a half you're probably talking a total 3 to 4 minutes, maybe.
I guess by the time you actually get it to table, that sort of thing. But you're talking about something that you very lightly salt, because it doesn't need a tremendous amount. You dust it in flour, and your pan should be medium heat.
Right.
The butter melted in that oil,
mm-hmm.
coating the pan nicely, but not deep enough to fry it, but enough so that you can slide that fish around in the pan. And the pan's got to be large enough that the fish is not curling out of the pan, like tail and head coming out of the thing.
No, you need everything hitting surface of the bottom of the pan.
It needs to be hitting cooking surface.
Yeah.
And when the fish goes in, You move it around immediately right away a little tiny bit to make sure that you have enough.
Shake
I think
the
people
pan.
Either don't have enough fat or too much fat in a pan when they cook so much at the time. You shake the pan a little bit to make sure that your fat level's not spilling over the fish, and also that you have enough that the fish will actually move in the pan. And you're talking about probably a minute and a half on a side to get it brown, and maybe a minute on the other side.
Yeah.
And if you want to be adventurous and flip it, that's entirely up to you, but I take no responsibility for your flipping.
Just use a fish spatula.
A fish spatula or any kind of a high-heat spatula. You don't want to melt some sort of plastic device
no.
in your pan with your fish.
Definitely
not. People will do that. The other thing is if you scoop across the fish, like around across the waist, let's say, like a belt, you'll tear it right in half.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do it the long way. The easiest thing is if you have a tail on it, just lift the tail up a tiny little bit with your fingers, slide the spatula underneath, and flip the guy over. You may have to re-up your butter a little bit.
It will begin to absorb it, so you're going to have to add a little bit of fat to the pan while you're cooking. If you don't like the color of your fat, just knock that fat out and put new fat in. There's nothing wrong with doing that.
In a minute and a half, unless you get your pan too hot,
right?
It's not going to be a problem. The thing that happens is that the oil in the skin of the fish will actually flavor the butter a little bit, and that goes a long way to making it taste the way that you want it to. By the time you're out of the pan, you need to go on to have a plate ready with whether it's a paper towel or something just to mm-hmm. blot it a tiny bit. Maybe even not if you're not that worried about the oil and that much oil landing on your plate.
I would go right onto the plate.
Thinking about the healthful aspect of it.
I'm a cornmeal girl. I would do mine in cornmeal.
I understand.
Rather than flour. So that's a choice. That's an alternative too.
I'm saying, yeah, I guess my thoughts are towards making it as healthful as you can. And it's such an easy foil for a simple accent or a simple garnish.
Or a good relish.
Yeah, no question. And if you want to go ahead and make this your butter allowance for the day or the week or whatever it might be, a little bit of brown butter from that same pan.
Lemon brown butter.
It's classic and delicious with the fish.
Yeah, and you could also do tiny capers and oil and lemon on top, or you could do lemon supremes, which is the interior of the lemon. It's hard to describe on the radio, but you just basically peel the outside of the lemon so all the white, the
like
skin
the,
and the white
the,
is
the,
off.
The fillet of the lemon.
Fillet, yeah, you cut into the lemon so that it doesn't have any of the pith on it and or the skin. And you can use that with the capers and oil and a little black pepper. That would be delicious.
That's a fish that's already portioned for one, so.
Yeah, that's nice. It's perfect. Yeah, I would hesitate to cook 7 trout for a family. I mean, you could certainly do it, but that's a lot of pans or a lot of big pans.
Yeah, if you're going to do a bunch of trout for a family, it would have to be something that you like pan fried and wet in the oven with or something.
Yeah.
The thing is that it has to be cooked relatively gently. You can't crush the fish. It's going to dry out really quickly.
Yeah, it's a quick cook, which is nice when you're trying to make dinner.
Corn is on the way too, so let's talk about corn, because that's going to be seasonal. It's going to be helpful for people. So, how do you center meal around corn?
There's just so many things to do with corn. Obviously we can roast it in the husk and make a relish from it, or you can just roast it in the husk, cut it off the cob, and sauté it in butter and serve it that way. You could add some fresh lima beans to it. You could add cucumber and lima beans and zucchini to it, which is sort of my version of succotash. With a little salt and pepper. I do saute that in butter, and I do think it's important to add a little bit of butter to that to make it really good. But if you felt that you just absolutely couldn't have the butter, you could certainly do it in corn oil. But you need to blanch your beans ahead of time and add it to the pan on pickup. So when you're getting ready to serve it, a little salt and pepper. As far as healthy things with corn, eating it as a vegetable or, as I said, making a relish, which you could add a little bit of chive, lemon juice, salt, pepper, and olive oil, a very light olive oil. I would not want a strongly flavored olive oil with that. You could even use just corn oil to make a little relish, and you could serve that with a piece of grilled pork or braised piece of pork.
Pretty good healthful relish with that, with something like a relish, is tzatziki, the Greek garnish with Greek yogurt. Cucumbers, cut them in brunoise, or I guess small dice, the size of corn kernels, the fresh corn that's been roasted in the husk, cut off the husk, added to that, fresh dill, lemon, that maybe with that trout or maybe with any other simple protein. That rice and trout would be a
That would be a good meal.
Fantastic meal.
You could also make go a different direction with the corn and do a small dice or a very fine chop of jalapeno pepper, a little bit of finely chopped shallot, cilantro, corn oil. Again, you could add some acid, but you don't have to. I would add lime juice if I was going to add acid, and make a relish for anything. That would be great with chicken. That would be great with pork.
Let me push you into your pork, because I think with pork, people don't know what to do with cuts. And so talk for a second about cuts of pork that are cost effective, and also talk for a second about the heritage breed versus, you know, just general pork that you can buy in the grocery store.
I think when you are talking about pork, you want sort of the pork, the hog that's been raised the best way. And that's when and bred for eating.
For flavor.
Right, which is what the heritage breeds are. So these are old hogs that before they were sort of genetically, you know.
The old hogs, old lines.
Old lines, sorry. Old lines of hogs.
Got a really old hog.
And this is the kind of hog that my uncle would have raised on his farm in Pennsylvania. And I remember when we used to go there and they would have a big party for the family. He would slaughter a hog and he would grill the loin and different cuts from it. And oh my gosh, I mean, for us. And it would be... I mean, this is the best pork loin you've ever had in your life. The loin is actually one of my least favorite cuts because it has sort of an odd, to me, the loin always has, even though it's a primal cut, which means it's one of the best cuts and one of the more expensive cuts, it has an odd texture to it. I always, on the pork loin, I always like the cap around the eye of the loin the best. That has the best flavor and the best texture. You know, you can certainly work with the ribs of the pork. You can certainly work with the shoulder or the butt or a fresh ham. And he would also do that. We would often eat the fresh ham. And rather than the cut that is the ham, and rather than smoking it, he would maybe cure it and grill it as well. And oh my goodness, I love a fresh ham. Actually, my grandmother used to cook a fresh ham. That was something she would roast and have for a big Sunday dinner. And I don't think I don't know how available that is, but I'm sure any butcher would get you one if you asked for it.
You can definitely talk to people at some of the farmers markets in the area and get a fresh ham from a local hog.
Yeah. And you're just going to have...
It may take a little bit of time to get it done, but you sign up for it.
You're going to get it, right.
And get it when it's time.
The fat is better. The fat has better flavor. The meat itself has better texture and flavor. And that's it. That's the whole story with a heritage breed. And, you know, you do want to keep in mind that while it is a fatty animal, it's not necessarily... The meat is not necessarily riddled with fat.
No, and it's not necessarily a tender...
Right.
And tender cut. The point of pork is flavor.
Yeah,
It is not to be, like, buttery easy to deal with.
Right. So keep that in mind. A little bit of a marinade is always a good idea, particularly if you're doing a loin. With the shoulder or the butt, you're really going to have to roast it or braise it or... confit it. So you have a tougher cut of meat, and there are only some sections of those shoulder or the butt that you can actually roast and have tender enough. You have to pull the muscles out to do that. So really, you want to braise it.
If you had a small pork butt or a nice piece of shoulder, and you took the time to confit it, I mean, you could have that in your fridge for
so good.
A long time, and it's fat.
Yes.
And be able to have that as a piece of meals, you know, once or twice a week for several weeks.
Yeah,
that might be super effective.
It freaks me out to tell people to do that, but you have to make sure that there's no moisture in there, that the meat is actually only in fat, and that the meat is covered.
Has to be submerged.
It has to be submerged with the fat, and then you need to cover the pan that it's in, and it needs to stay properly refrigerated, and it needs to go into the refrigerator cool, not hot. So the only way that that's a healthy project is to do it that way, right? But it is a nice way to have food for a while.
It's superb 3,000-year-old technology.
Exactly. It is. But confit and pork fat is really quite tasty. And you can do many, many different things with it.
You just pull the meat and heat it right back up. Honestly, that you want to make the best eggs Benedict you're ever going to have in your life. You know, mm-hmm. Toast a nice fat slice of brioche or whatever kind of bread that you like in butter. Poach a couple of eggs and make a hollandaise, and that's a luxury sauce. That's a relatively inexpensive sauce.
Well, and if you like to make tacos at home, I mean, pulled pork is the best meat.
Oh, yeah.
You know, make a wonderful tomato, like a tomatilla salsa with, you know, jalapenos and cilantro and tomatillos and a small dice, a little bit of water and lime and salt and pepper, and just make a very simple salsa and onion. Did I say onion? And just That would be great. That would be a great little taco. And your kids would probably enjoy that too.
When you could reheat the pork for that, a little bit of fresh onion in the pan that's sweated a little while, and then recaramelize the pork with a little bit of onion.
Mm-hmm. A little bit of the pork fat from the confit. Yeah.
Can be just tremendous.
Yeah, there's so many things.
Getting very hungry.
I know. So many choices.
Well, when we come back on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine, we're going to keep running through ingredients and keep running through preparations and try to help folks cook healthfully and cost-effectively on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine.
Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Cindy Wolf.
And I'm Tony Foreman.
And we're talking about inexpensive way to eat, basically. You know, cost-effective food, things that are readily available.
And relatively healthy.
Easy to find and healthy. I mean, we have talked a little bit about butter, but, I mean, my goodness, we're not going to eradicate butter from our diet.
If the sun is coming up, Cindy, you're talking about butter, okay? I violated a little bit because I mentioned that Benedict dish. Mm-hmm. With the pork confit as being cost effective, which it is. I don't know that it's exactly calorically conscientious.
We're putting hollandaise on there if it's Benedict.
You need a glass of wine to wash it down to, to try to.
So what's the wine that you would serve with that dish, with the pulled pork?
Probably the best region in the world for wine that is cost effective and food flexible is Alsace. Mm-hmm. In the northeast of France. Right on the German border, the Rhine River runs right through it, and the most noble grape, the most famous one for aging over time, is Riesling. But there are excellent Pinot Blanc, literally white Pinot. There are 48 varieties of Pinot grapes grown, they're all grown in Alsace. In fact, I know one fellow who has all 48 varieties in one field.
Oh my gosh!
Because he's kind of a wizard.
That's cool.
That's for another program. Mm-hmm. But a glass of a good Pinot Blanc, and you're in good vintages, 12 and 13. 13 is pretty bad in a lot of France, but in Alsace is strong, and you're going to have like fresh, young, very clean Pinot Blanc to drink. That, you know, very like appley, not the smoky of Pinot Gris. Appley clean with a Benedict dish. And that'll make all those calories wash away.
Okay, Pinot Blanc.
That's a big lie. So, but it'll make you much happier.
You have carrots on your list, and I have onion, celery, and carrots. So why don't you start?
I think carrots, when they're really good, are a great thing to make a dish with. I mean, the thing is to get good carrots. You're not talking about it's funny. People will say horse carrots. You know, the sort of giant like carrots grown on some crazy factory farm, but carrots that are nice with tops. And we're in a state that a lot of the year people will grow local carrots that have pretty good flavor. You don't want them too tiny. You can't do much with them. And you don't want them the giant quote-unquote horse carrots. You want something that's, you know, what, 4, 5, 6 inches.
Right. And do want them with the tops still on.
In length. You want them with the tops because that'll give you an idea of how fresh they are. Mm-hmm. If they've been shipped across the country, they certainly don't have their tops. And if the tops don't smell like carrots, don't buy the carrots. Mm-hmm. And like, no joke, because they carry all the scent.
I love carrots. It's my favorite snack. Just eat some raw carrots. I eat them all the time. So good. When they're sweet, they're amazing.
I love raw carrots. I love cooked carrots much more. Mm-hmm. And carrots, if you slice them very thin, you can make an excellent, very simple gratin in a gratin dish. Slice very thin, layered, a couple of layers high. You could use butter, which would make Cindy smile. You could use a little bit of relatively neutral oil. The biggest thing is a little bit of breadcrumb and some kind of a hard cheese. It could be Parmigiano Reggiano. It could be something else that's more cost-effective. Watch the things that are more cost-effective. Sometimes watch the salt level. Sometimes buying a nice piece of Parmigiano, it goes a very long way if you use a microplane.
It's true.
If you poach those carrots first in very salted water, bring them down to room temperature, slice them very thin, lay them on the gratin dish. A little toasted breadcrumb, very fine. Cover the entire thing with that. Put it in the oven. When it's ready to come out of the oven and the breadcrumbs are just beginning to brown, just do a very fine dusting in the Parmigiano Reggiano, and that you'd be surprised how remarkable the flavor is. You can go, if it's thin layers of carrots, thin meaning the size of a penny and not something thicker than that, which requires a little bit of knife skill, they kind of melt together in a very nice way. That and a little drizzle of agave or a little drizzle of a little tiny drizzle of very good honey is great. If you want, you can sauce those carrots in advance with that, or you can do it as an addition at the very end. I actually end up liking it better, and I use less when it's a little bit at the very end.
Okay. Sounds good.
That's nice as a side dish for something else, but
I like carrots with tomato and curry so much. Those are some of my favorites. So I make a soup that way, and I just saute the onions and butter.
Soup.
Oh gosh! And you don't, you know, so saute the onions and butter, corn oil. Add your carrots. Add pureed tomato, or you can use fresh tomato. Some is, you know, maybe use tomatoes that are soft from a salad, and add them to the pot with a large amount of carrots, a little bit of onion, and I just sort of add the mild curry to the pot as the onions and the carrots are sautéing, and then I add the tomato product. I add a little bit of chicken stock and cream if you want, and you could forget both of those things if you don't want either one of those in, but I like them both in, and salt and pepper, and just let everything simmer gently for about 15, 20 minutes, and then puree it and strain it. And that is something, I mean, if you like the soup enough, soup is always better the next day. You could certainly eat it more than one day if you don't mind, you know, having leftovers. Or you could eat it cold. So you could maybe eat it hot the first day for dinner when you've made it. And then, you know, 2 days later, have a little chilled carrot soup for salad for lunch.
Not surprisingly, wine from Alsace is probably a pretty good match for that,
okay,
that
good.
Little soup as well. When you're dealing with ingredients in, from Indian cooking, Thai cooking, a lot of Asian cooking, it does well.
I think also with carrots, I mean, when you were talking about you have carrots written down and I have mirepoix, which is carrot, celery, and onion. And I think I can't imagine not just having all three of those things in my refrigerator pretty much all the time, because I can kind of, you know, there are times when I come home and I don't have anything in my refrigerator, but if I have some basic things in there and I have some basic things in my pantry, I can make a meal.
It is remarkable if you can cook when you just find things. We joked about quinoa at the beginning of this segment, and I realized it was last week I had to make a meal, and I was like, well, what have I got?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a box of quinoa. Quinoa is one of those things that you can spend three times as much for it in a very fancy store, or you can buy it at like a Middle Eastern grocery or something.
Okay.
And and spend very little for it. It's one of these ancient grains that beware what happens pricing-wise with that. It's a little bit easier than rice in some ways to cook. Your method's very, very quick and easy, and you have a great touch with it, but it's the same kind of thing where you're going to sweat shallot or onion in a pan, and I wouldn't use butter for this. It's just a neutral oil, grapeseed oil or something, whatever's most cost-effective, canola oil or something. Sweat that, and then bring the heat up a little bit and toast your quinoa with that. And that quantity-wise, if you have like the standard sort of box that you see in stores, you're looking at maybe two shallots worth of toasting that. And what I had were a few fava beans, and I had a little bit of duck bacon, but you could certainly use pork bacon or the pork confit we talked about having in your fridge or something like that. Or if you wanted to make it vegetarian, favas and carrots would be terrific as well. And the quinoa will take about 15, 20 minutes and not that much stirring. It's just a wooden spoon and some stirring. And it's somewhere between like wild rice and lentils or something to cook. And then when you get just about to the end there, the favas I had peeled and just laid the favas on top of, just literally covered the top of the quinoa that was almost done with the favas, and laid salt on those favas. And these are raw. These are not blanched. But they're peeled. Put the top on there and let it sit for 5 or 6 minutes, and then put the heat back on and added that little bit of bacon in and stirred those favas in. And the favas literally steamed from the little bit of cooling from the quinoa, and they absorbed that salt nicely. And, you know, that and just a bunch of chopped parsley and a poached egg on top of it was a pretty darn nice brunch dish. And that runny yolk is fantastic with the quinoa. That's some of the thing about a grain like that, because that's a grain with real texture. You need something as a foil for it. You need something that is like that egg yolk, that's a little bit luxurious.
Yeah.
And so that's one thing. We're talking about an exotic sort of grain, I guess, or one that's new to a lot of people in quinoa. But how about something that's ubiquitous with potatoes? We see them everywhere. They're frying potatoes. They're baking potatoes. They're potatoes that you like better for purees. You know, what do you use for what application? And honestly, how about what do you do with a baked potato? Or what do you do with a potato puree that's not going to cost you a fortune?
That's the great thing about, you know.
And be healthful.
Yeah, there's so many things you can do with, baked potato, leftover. I actually made myself one the other day because, again, it is a great meal for one person. And if you buy a large baking potato, while it takes, almost an hour for it to roast in the oven, you can eat half of it one way and the other half another way.
You can easily drink two glasses of wine in the meantime.
Oh, my goodness. So I just had it very simply with, I don't eat in a healthy way. I had it with creme fraiche and butter and salt and pepper and cheddar cheese, actually. Oh, boy. So a healthy way to eat a baked potato, I don't know. Put some broccoli on there, which we'll have locally. We already have it locally now. So you could put broccoli or spinach on there or all kinds of things that are vegetables that you like. And that's it. But the leftovers, I actually chopped up the skin with the little bit of potato
when you
left.
Go from, the look on the change in the look on your face when you go from the three dairy products that you like to the throw some vegetables on there is amazing. Vegetables, maybe. You talk about having mirepoix in the
I'm not putting mirepoix on my baked potato.
Yeah, but just a mirepoix that you caramelize a little bit.
You could put small dice of carrot, celery, and onion sautéed in oil with salt and pepper on your potato. And
sure
you could add some bacon to that. You could add some of that pork confit to that. I know, I'm not taking this seriously, but
the spinach and restuffing it sort of thing, I think, might be very...
No, spinach would be good.
That might be very interesting.
You could put a little ricotta cheese in. You could buy a low-fat ricotta.
Now you're speaking my language.
Yeah, I love ricotta cheese. And, spinach ricotta.
Pine nuts might be...
And the leftover of the baked potato would be fine. I just kind of chopped mine up. And then I take the other half of the potato and just sort of break up the skin, and I sauteed it in a little bit of corn oil and added, that's when I actually did add vegetables to it. So that was really kind of fun because I added, I had actually green beans in my refrigerator that I had culled from a salad, and I just cut those into little pieces. And I had some chickpeas, which I know that's on your list too. And I actually crushed those and added that to the pan, and I did add bacon, so we could skip the bacon part. But I would definitely suggest adding. Well, we're trying to be healthy, but mix. But that, I think that would, that's just another fun way to kind of deal with it. The other half of the potato, but
so it's kind of like a hash with the potato skin.
Exactly. You could add onions to it. But the other thing, you talk about what do you do with what potato? Fingerling potatoes make the best potato puree, and I do peel them. But first
They're little and expensive and a pain in the backside.
They are.
But
so,
gosh, they're nice.
They are. They're delicious. And if you were to make potato puree from fingerling potatoes, you would cook them in their skins in heavily salted water. And then you would pull the skin off and then you would rice them and make your potato puree. With Yukon Gold potatoes, which are so very versatile, there are about a million things, again, you can do with. This is a great thing about food. There's so many different things you can do with food. I'll peel my Yukon Gold, thinly slice it, and make cakes, what I call a cake, which is just thinly sliced potato laid out like a flour in a hot pan. You can use corn oil. You can use bacon fat. You can use duck fat. You can use butter. You can use whatever you want that's on, in your health scale to use. And just thinly sliced, cook it on both sides. You have to flip it, and you can either learn how to flip it, or you can use a fish spatula is good for that, or any kind of metal spatula is good to flip the potato. And that's a really fun way to make a potato cake. And you could add chives to that. You could put creme fraiche on that. You could put goat cheese on that. You could put Reggiano cheese on that. You could put other fresh herbs than the chives. You could use a little bit of tiny, really finely chopped rosemary and serve that with a piece of salmon. Or another fish. It's really great with fish. I love it with beef, and I actually make that potato cake for my eggs in the morning sometimes too. But it's really good with a piece of fish.
I think with Yukons, I almost always want to do like an olive oil crushed potato. So it's pretty naturally healthful kind of a thing. And I was thinking about a person cooking for themselves. You literally boil one or two potatoes in heavily salted water. And once they cool down enough that you can handle them, but they're still warm, you crush them in a bowl with a little bit of very good olive oil, and you check the salt level and add the salt that you need or you don't need. You lay that out on the plate. You have a tiny bit of a fresh herb, just a little bit of chive, could be a little bit of parsley, a little bit of basil. It's almost explosive, the flavor that you get. That is a very easy, very quick way to do something nicely.
Mm-hmm.
So please let me talk about things that I love.
Okay, what is that?
Beans.
Oh, yes.
Beans and peas, you know this.
Beans are great.
I recently read a story, I forget the news source, where they talked about all of the people who are the longest living people around the world in different parts of the world. And a lot of them had carbohydrate-based diets, and a lot of their carbohydrate-driven diets were based on beans. No joke. One of those groups of people are in Sardinia, in the center of the country, and there's a bunch of villages, and it's chickpeas like crazy. And chickpeas I love.
Me too.
And chickpeas are not a big piece of money.
They take a long time to cook.
They take patience. And it's the kind of thing that you wake up and you deal with it in the morning, and then you can make decisions about what you want to do with it for dinner or for the next day.
They are very inexpensive.
But they're not a big piece of money. And you can get good flavor from them with just dried herbs. If it's just onion that you have and dried herbs and water.
Right.
If you cook them correctly, meaning the skins are not falling off of them, you can get a nice product. And then they can be mashed into a cake. And then they can be given breadcrumb and fried in the pan and served with a piece of the pulled pork that you've made or the chicken thigh that you made. There's so many different
things
that you can do.
And when you say cooked correctly.
Cooked correctly means to where it's al dente but not raw. I mean, that's where there's still texture to it, but it's neither mushy. The main thing is that skin is not coming off yet. That's when it becomes mushy. If the skin is still intact, if they cool in the water they've cooked in, you cook them almost until they're done. When you feel like they're slightly underdone, cool them in the water, or even if you have stock, God bless you, much better in the stock. Cool them in the stock until they're literally cold, not room temp, or until they're cold. Then bring them out of that, and then you can double check them. You're probably going to do something else with them again anyway. But if you took them to where they were almost done, they will have cooled and carried over enough sitting in that water. But your texture should be intact on the chickpeas. That we keep talking about tomatoes that are a little bit overripe. Very easy to make a salad with chickpeas and the tomatoes that are overripe. Almost any of the one or two simple vegetables. You know, and they love dried herbs. They love savory. They love dried thyme. Dried rosemary. This is one of those things in the wintertime, if you want to make something that's very simple, easy, satisfying, helpful. So I think that's all we have time for.
That was fun.
And thanks for listening to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
You can get this broadcast or others as podcasts on the WIPR website at wipr.org. And correspond with us with any questions or comments, Foreman Wolf at wipr.org. Thanks for listening to Foreman Wolf on WIPR.